This is day 5 of the May 88 7-day retreat. Today we will look at what we call the self, the me. Whether there is such an entity. Also manifesting as the thinker. Is there a thinker separate from thinking? But before we begin talking about this and looking at it, let me say that what is being said, what will be said, which is not planned out in the mind, is not judgmental. Saying it is right or wrong, good or bad. Sometimes it's very difficult for us to listen to talk about self when one is already feeling guilty about being selfish, self-centered. Thinking one shouldn't be that way, should be otherwise. And then a talk like this just feeds into this feeling. Because if one is involved with guilt feelings about oneself, or any kind of feelings, the mind isn't sensitively open to listen and easily distorts what is being said, confirming one's conviction one way or the other. So then, often, someone says to me, you said we should die to the self, or something like this. No talk about what should be. We're looking at things, and if something is in the form of a statement, it is always there for verification, instantly and as we go along, and for questioning in a private meeting or in a group discussion. So nothing becomes fixed and cast in stone, but that a dialogue remains alive about this. So is it possible, as one begins this talking, listening process, to be aware of guilt feelings and fears of looking, so that maybe by being aware of it, it is possible to open up and listen freely? What is it that we call the self? In sitting here right now, this instant, there is a very palpable body feeling of this organism, its joints, skin, the breathing, the heartbeat. There is this body. There's no denying this fact, no calling this body an illusion. It's there. And this body, being alive, has definite needs. Need for food, nourishment, water. Need for warmth, or when it is extremely hot, for cooling. Need for air. We were talking in the early parts of the retreat, we were talking about dependency. We are totally dependent on air, on oxygen, and on food, certain foods. Without that, we don't survive. So with these bodily needs, there can be an intelligent way of taking care of them, so that this organism, which includes the brain, a highly sensitive, complex instrument, so that this body-mind survives. To eat good food, breathe fresh air if at all possible, exercise, get the proper rest. Stay away from substances which are toxic to the body, injurious. That is an intelligent way of taking care of this body. And this is often called self-preservation. But this is not how we use the word self later on. This is preserving, keeping the body healthy, which includes the brain. In addition to the physical process, which is this body, there are, it's not apart from this process, there is all that has been inherited as talents, skills, capacities. What we're able to do, a musical talent, talent for art or mathematics, or a skill for building, imagining, physical prowess or intellectual prowess, which is largely dependent on genes, chromosomes, which are not our possession. They come from a vast pool of human inheritance, and not just human inheritance. Human beings have evolved from the animals, and there are animal inheritances lodged in this brain, memories, mechanisms. There is this whole enormous field of our upbringing. All of us, all human beings, without exception, having been born from a mother, raised by parents, one or two or more, as helpless infants, totally helpless, totally dependent on whoever took care of us. This is universally so, and leaves universal imprints on a human being. That stage of helplessness, dependency, the gratifications and the pains that go with it. There is our historical, cultural, social class conditioning. All of us born into this kind of environment, different, and yet all of us born into some kind of environment, and all the accumulated conditioning from culture, social class, past history, family, our education in schools or wherever one has been educated, trained. That's all incorporated in this organism through memory traces in the brain and a functioning too complex to totally understand and survey from the outside, but observable as one lives from moment to moment. These are all very factual statements about what this organism is composed of, the ingredients of it, and how it functions, the causes of it. Causes for reaction being our previous conditioning. This can all be described, can it not, without referring to oneself as a self, a me. Processes that are going on. One conditioning of great weight and significance is the language we have learned and that we speak. Which includes the I, the me, the you, mine and yours. The language stating I am such and such, you are such and such. I have two hands. I have a head. This implies, does it not, that there is a separate owner of parts of this body or of the totality of this body. This is my body, we say. Language puts it that way. The way we've always heard ourselves and others talked about, and we've looked at it many times during this retreat, the enormous power of words on our behavior, on our way of thinking and acting. This is also part of our universal inheritance. Growing up with a language which molds our thinking about ourselves and each other, just alone by the way we put things in language. And then the feeling that because it is put this way, it needs be this way. It is through language, not only language, also gesture, but largely language we have been told since we've been small, what we are. Good or bad, or cute, or a monster. Intelligent, smart, or stupid. Better than, or worse than. Not as good as. And from beginningless time, having been told what we should be, rather than what we are, in contrast to what we are. What we are is bad, we should be better. What we are is undesirable, unacceptable. We should be different, we should be like this, like him or her. This has been an accumulative impact of our life. Having heard and impressed upon what we are, what we should be and shouldn't be, could become, or should become. Is it out of all of these external influences upon a growing organism that there precipitates this feeling that there is not just fear, a deep-seated conviction feeling that there is a separate me in addition to this organism, its capacities, talents, abilities, state of development, I mean physiological, that there is an I that goes through changes, separate from these physiological changes, maturation changes, separate from what's there. Or is one already born with a deep memory trace of being a separate I? Maybe you're already born that way. And growing right into this kind of environment where everybody believes that and talks that way and acts and reacts that way, it just flows along naturally in this stream of selves. Separate selves. Can we discern the difference between what is factually given in each human being? We started out that way, the body, the conditioning, the capacities, the looks, and how one thinks and feels about oneself and verbalizes it inwardly and outwardly. Fathom that there could be a way of living, responding, working, feeding oneself, being alive, even the joy of living, the joy of perceiving the beauty of heaven and earth, the birds, a deer, or the beauty of another human being, without any sense of I. One may have never asked this question. One may be so convinced that one cannot live or continue living without this feeling of me as a separate, hopefully permanent entity. hopefully, in quotation marks, we hope that way. It is fathomable, isn't it, that there could be just perception of what comes up inside and outside without immediately saying this is me or this is not me, mine or it shouldn't be this way, I should be different. But we'll put the fathoming aside. One thing we haven't mentioned, which is also a part of every human being, is accumulated memories about one's life. Different life experiences recorded in the brain that has the capacity to record memories. And not just record memories from very early times of one's life. Some people say they can record they can remember intrauterine existence, birth, the birth process has been remembered by some people, very, very early scenes, scenarios. So the brain has that capacity to remember impressions, experiences, and accumulate these memories, not one taking the place of the next, but accumulate them. There is a vast capacity in this brain for memory. We're told by brain scientists that only the smallest part of the brain is used yet. An almost infinite capacity for more use, more memory, and maybe some use that is not fathomed right now. But in addition to the capacity of the brain to store memories, there's also the capacity to think about these stored memories. To think of these stored, accumulated memories as being the story of my life. To think of an I having had all of these experiences. Or an I, a me, being all of these different things that one pictures, being beautiful or ugly, being capable or clumsy, stupid or intelligent, better than or worse. Having been told these things or found them out from our report cards or how other people react to us, the brain has the capacity to form images about this me. Form images and assume that these all refer to me, are my possession, are me. It's difficult to describe it, but it's very dramatic to observe it. Most common example we cite, because it happens most commonly throughout our daily life, is being told something critical or insulting, being done something that is felt to be injustice, the hurt. And if one looks closely, sensitively, openly, realizing it is a self-image that has been hurt, or a self-image that has been flattered. And the deep feeling, conviction, sense that this self-image is me. Meaning what? What does that mean? Some separate entity. In addition to what's there. In addition to this body. A couple days ago we read a selection by Krishnamurti in which he talked about, or rather asked, do you have any precious things in the mind that you're guarding and protecting? Any beliefs, opinions, ideas, superstitions? Not just the physical possessions, the clothes or the furniture or the car or stereo, but mental possessions. And probably the most precious of those mental possessions is the idea of oneself, isn't it? Consisting of all the images one has, this picture storybook of our life. Which we live to protect, to defend, to enhance, to make into something. Can one be aware of all of that? As it happens, not as a theoretical statement. Is it true? Is it so that there is lodged in the mind a strong idea about oneself as being a separate entity, permanent, at least permanent for this life, and maybe for future lifetimes or a life after death, continuing, and the attachment to that idea lodged in the mind. Of me, which is all the pictures, all the remembered experiences, with the pleasures that go with it, or the fears that go with it, the anxiety or the pain that goes with it. And this hope for its continuation, at best forever, or at least for some time, and always with that the lurking fear of not continuing, of ending. myself coming to an end and the fear of that, the anxiety about it. Which, as we're looking at it right now, is image, isn't it? The way we think about death is thought, is image, isn't it? One sees somebody dying and imagines oneself dying. And the fear of that. Which takes both the desire to continue, which is image, continue as an image. The whole process is imagined. And the fear of death as an image, as an idea. Trying to imagine what it would be to die, and the fear of that. Thought scaring itself, with itself. One can say, well, isn't it natural? Isn't it one of the natural manifestations of life? To want to survive. We talked about it at the very beginning. There is an intelligent way of taking care of this body and mind so that it can live healthily for as long as it lives. There has to be no imagination of continuation going with it, and therefore no fear of ending. The fear of ending is linked to the wish for continuing. And the wish for continuing takes place in imagination. Is that clear? Not just abstractly, theoretically, but one cannot think about continuing unless one is thinking. It's so simple. Not easy, because we're so afraid, so obsessed with ideas about not being there, dying or disappearing, which are all ideas. So, does the question come up naturally? How or why does this idea of oneself remain so firmly lodged throughout the mind and body? Or is that inevitably so? Unchangeably so? Or can that be discovered as we react and respond to each other and to situations from moment to moment? Can this conditioning of me, my image, my hurt, my want, my improvement, my aggrandizement, can that be discovered in action? Or rather, in reaction. So it doesn't remain this totally immovable, taken for granted structure in the brain, which it is. Can one begin to notice it? And all of us have begun to notice it. It cannot escape one if one is at all interested in how one functions. from moment to moment? Can one begin to notice afresh how one brings oneself into practically every situation mentally, and with that physically? Sort of as though there was this constant question, how do I come into this? How can I get into this? With my importance or my weight or my unimportance, my goodness or my badness. Can one notice that? Can there be a glimpse of that as it happens? Which is what blinds us or constricts us to freely relating to each other and to the things around us. The moment this thought comes in, how do I get into this? What this means to me? How perceptive I am or how dull I am? Then there is preoccupation with idea and image, and the direct relationship is clouded or blinded, darkened or non-existent. Because with the thought about oneself goes emotion, anger, fear. Or the craving to get pleasure out of something. How can I use this to feel better? What can bring about a clear, objective, impartial observation of what is happening as we walk, talk, relate to each other, eat, walk, think, dream. What's going on? Somebody says something and immediately I'm irritated. Immediately I feel flattered. Immediately I disagree. Immediately I'm afraid or angry. Why? Or immediately I want to say, me too. I know that too. I know it better. Just waiting to express myself and therefore not able to listen to what somebody is saying. Immediately wanting to take a stand in order to feel something about myself, that I know better, that I have a position, that I am existing as somebody. As long as we do it unawares, it continues this strengthening of the feeling of being separate and the fear of not continuing as that. If it is noticed, if there is awareness of it, then it may lose its power. It may be seen for what it is. That is, memory, fantasy, imagination. And all that goes with it, emotionally, physically. can, is it possible to listen as one is talking, as one is sort of producing oneself in relationship? Is it possible to notice that so clearly that something changes, something doesn't continue? So that what clouds and isolates and disrupts relationship drops away, and then there's just the immediacy of two people talking with each other, exploring something, without all of this extra. Somebody asked this question upon coming into the meeting, having sat in the waiting room, and as the person was telling me, thinking from old conditioning, I have to bring something to her, produce something, and then asking, why am I trying to impress you? Was asked more generally, why is one trying to impress somebody? It's a very simple, almost, it sounds like a mundane question, but it has enormous depth of inquiry to it. Why is one trying to impress somebody? An hour of explanations for it, which is one way of approaching it, going back to childhood again and so forth. Or one can look right now, does this have to continue? It implies a difference between you and me, me in need of making you think that I am somebody, needing to be somebody. And therefore, an awkwardness, a blockage, not a flow between two human beings. So, the question having been asked, why do I need to impress somebody? Can I watch when I'm with people, with you and you and you? Watch whether this is happening as it happens, and why? Is it necessary? Does it have to continue? Or if it doesn't continue, this sort of spells doom for me. It's going to be the end of me. And one can examine that right then and there. There doesn't have to be an image of oneself. There doesn't have to be attachment to it. And it's only when that is not that there can be freedom from fear. Walking lightly. Open. Open to something being said and a reaction coming up, and it doesn't have to come up. If it already has come up because there was no attention, then can one see it as immediately as awareness is there and be done with it? I don't have to be anybody. Being somebody trying to fortify and protect and enhance the structure brings endless contortion, distortion, conflict, isolation, misery, and all the pleasures that go with it too. Is that why it's so difficult to look at it, or the fear of maybe losing the self-image because one thinks that all one's pleasures are linked up with that? I wouldn't have any fun anymore if I wasn't me. You laugh, but this is how we feel. How we think. But this is not complete examination of what it is, this me. The question here also came up in a meeting, what is pleasure? And we're using two different terms here. Sometimes talking about joy, the joy of being alive without attachment to this image of oneself and therefore in touch with a bird, with clouds, with other people, with the earth on which we walk. There's a real joy in that. Joy of being alive, which doesn't necessarily mean happy all the time. Whereas the word pleasure refers more to imagined, remembered, or anticipated. Satisfactions, fulfillments. Gratifications. The thought of me in there and the nourishing of that idea of me, which can generate energies. We've often talked about this. The thought of me being good or being capable or being important, being loved or admired can generate energies. And to these energies we become addicted. The energies that can be generated by self-image can happen all in fantasy. There's another capability of the brain to remember past pleasant events and generate almost the same pleasure as was generated at the time they happened. That part of image we are afraid of losing, the pleasure that it affords and gives. But we don't want that part which gives us fear and anxiety or anger. But it's both image, both thought, fantasy. Does one see that? So is it possible of a moment to listen, be open, not control the senses, no controller, and not thought and image immediately wanting to make something of it, to remember for future pleasure? And if thought and image does come in, to see that as one hears the birds and let go of it? So that the air is always clear and fresh. By habit, thought does come in. The moment attention lets up, thought comes in, habitually, to make things out of what was, store it, keep going back to it. But that can be observed and seen as it happens, and it doesn't have to continue at that moment of seeing. It doesn't have to continue. One doesn't know that. Often people say, I have the feeling I have to think about this. Maybe something worrisome. I think I have to worry about this. One can question all habits of thought and wonder whether they have to continue. Right now, in this instant of listening openly, you can say, well, isn't there a listener? Isn't there me listening? That's thought, isn't it? It's the very process of thought. Isn't there me listening? When there's listening and no thought, where is the me? It's just, can't do it as well as that. The moment there is the thought, it is me listening, then there is me, because there's a thought about it. But listening needs no thought about me listening. It doesn't need it. Not only doesn't it need it, it's much clearer without it. Much more immediate and full of depth and richness. So can one see the thought of I am listening as thought, hear it as thought, or I can't listen is also thought, I can't hear it, I'm not as good as someone else's, all thought with its connected emotions, which immediately dull and cloud the perception. what is going on? Can you just listen? Not to what one think one ought to hear, but to what's there, inside and out. We will end here for today.